Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And it's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. The government shutdown showed a side of Barack Obama not seen or admired all that much in his presidency, practitioner of the art of power. Now we're seeing his power tested by the buggy rollout of Obamacare being used by the Republicans to try and kill the whole law. My next guest has a long view of the point where presidential power meets aspirations to make change. John Meacham, Pulitzer Prize-winning historian, executive editor at Random House, former editor-in-chief of Newsweek, and co-host of Need to Know on PBS, is the author of Thomas Jefferson, The Art of Power, now out in paperback. We also may sneak in a little Pope Francis talk, since John also has written a lot about religion. Hi, John. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
And one parallel between Obama's and Thomas Jefferson's presidencies is ferociously partisan times. This is 1801 to 1809 in Jefferson's case. What defined the partisanship of those days that early in our nation's history?
Well, Mark Twain once said that history may not repeat itself, but it does rhyme. And so a lot of the issues of power and who has it were in play in the first decades of the early republic. The question for Jefferson and Hamilton, who was really his chief rival, and John Adams, who was a close second, was the nature of power. Who would have it? Would it be the federal government? Would it be the states? Would we be more allied with France? Would we be more allied with England? And that had a number of implications. It was really not terribly unlike the kind of questions we face now. Jefferson once said that men have divided themselves into parties over whether the interests of the many or the interests of the few should predominate, since those questions convulsed Greece and Rome. So talk about the long view.
Right. And that sounds a lot like we're dealing with now, the interests of the many versus the interests of the few.
It's very much a perennial argument. Now, that obviously, I don't want to be anachronistic, but if you're talking about a tall, cool, cerebral president in the White House who wants to bring about an ideal vision, bring it as close to reality as possible, you have some parallels. And I think the difference is that Jefferson at some level and to some degree enjoyed politics, I think rather more than President Obama does.
And you write about in your biography of Jefferson that he could not resist the heat of political combat. And Obama, I guess, does not love combat for combat's sake, and tried at first, I think, in his presidency to avoid it. But the Republicans wouldn't play with him.
Absolutely. And this cannot be this is not a zero-sum game. We cannot point simply at the White House and say the system is dysfunctional and it's the president's fault, obviously. You have a handful of Republicans on Capitol Hill right now who are bitter enders. You know, that they have an ideological view which is not shared even by the large number of their co-party members. And so we can't I don't think this is any one person's fault here. I don't want to use false equivalents either. I mean, I think that there is a handful of Republicans who have decided that they're going to get what they want no matter what, and have ignored really the will of the majority on this. My sense is that no matter what you want to say about the logic or the intellectual consistency of a given moment, this is what we hire presidents to do. And we hire them to manage largely unmanageable situations to get us from point A to point B. And that's what the job is. And I don't think that's a mystery to anyone who runs for it.
So through the lens of the art of power, a lot of people believe Obama wielded power in a different way in the recent shutdown than he has in the past, expressing less willingness to compromise on the basics of Obamacare or letting the Republicans flirt with default
right
to get their way on policy. And I wonder if you saw a change, and whether it's an Obama learning curve or just that the circumstances were different than in past negotiations with Congress or refusals to negotiate?
Well, I can't prove this, but my own sense is that life at the highest levels is a lot like our lives, only more so. And so often a human reading of a situation is probably pretty close to the truth. You know, that's true throughout history. I think the president has had it with the radicals in the Republican Party. And he and so is the country, clearly. And I think that he just realized that, you know, people like me and others keep saying, well, if you'd have a drink with John Boehner, you'd have a drink with Mitch McConnell, think, you know, somehow know the kingdom of God would come around. Well, guess what? Boehner couldn't control that caucus. And I think there was a certain, A, frustration on the president's part, and then B, thinking, you know what, I'm not going to deal with these folks right now. And that's the right answer. The question for him will be, will he take the right or wrong lesson from that intransigence in the negotiation, and will he be able to negotiate going forward? My own sense is yes.
The right lesson, in your opinion, being?
Being that it's okay to be unbending when you're dealing with a truly radical out of the mainstream group, but that doesn't mean that you can therefore not deal with the large number of Republicans who are in fact interested in governing, but who, for their own reasons, not particularly admirable, feel so fearful of a primary challenge from the right. My new favorite verb is to be primaried. You know, can we subjugate that? I shall have been primaried. Mm. You know, you talked to really great senators, Lamar Alexander, Bob Corker, people who really are interested in governing and making the world work. And their concern is Tea Party challengers coming at them.
And one of the questions that people have been asking lately along those lines is whether the Republican Party might actually split into two, the Tea Party wing and the more mainstream wing, one or the other, keeping the name Republican Party. Does history suggest anything about how that might or might not happen?
Well, history would suggest that the parties would remain – it would be remain a duopoly, and that the ideological composition of the two parties would change. The last time we had a third party just fully go away really was the Whigs in the middle of the 19th century, middle to the late 19th century. And yes, there was a progressive party, but that was absorbed into the existing parties. The Dixiecrats were absorbed into that. The two parties now have about 150 years experience of taking the center of gravity away from third party challenges. My own sense is that the Republican Party does face as profound a choice as the Democrats faced after the 1970s and 1980s, which is, will they allow the more extreme ideological elements of their party to define who they are altogether? The Democrats, who faced that challenge, actually overcame it. I mean, the lesson of 1992, the lesson of 8 years, the only two Democratic presidents to be reelected since FDR, of Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, is that you do have to deal with the center of American life. And the Democrats totally get that and totally have that. The Republicans now, to my mind, interestingly, need a Democratic Leadership Council. They need to reform that part of themselves, or they will continue toward this extreme obsolescence.
We have just a couple of minutes left with Pulitzer Prize winning historian John Meacham, who you might also know from PBS and Newsweek and other stuff that he's done. His Thomas Jefferson, The Art of Power, is out in paperback now. But before you go, did you see the statement by Larry Summers in the news today, Obama's former economics advisor? And of course, he didn't quite get the nomination to be Federal Reserve chairman, but he's talking like one. He says economic growth, not the deficit, is the biggest challenge our economy faces, which is the same position that Janet Yellen holds, I believe, yeah, who's nominated for the job. And we've talked about this issue a lot on this program. And I wonder, as a historian, if you think people may look back 100 years from now, and I realize you're not an economist, but look back 100 years from now and say the Tea Party politics of the day forced the country to deal with the deficit as if it was the most burning issue. President Obama failed in the art of power to convince the country that growth was the real emergency, and the economy languished for decades as a result of the sequester and other austerity measures that took their eye off the ball.
That's just a very cheerful way to begin the day. I think I actually have even a darker view.
That's hard.
I know it's hard. But here's what I think. I think it's possible that we may look back and see that conservative ideologues who said they wanted to deal with the debt and the deficit, but who fundamentally did not, because their own interests were such that they wanted to protect them. They wanted a rhetorical policy of taking care of the debt.
What spending is that?
Pick a military base in your district. Who really wants to touch Social Security and Medicare? They don't really want to do that. It's what Jonathan Rauch called demosclerosis 20 years ago in a very important book. We all have a stake in a system, and so therefore when you go into it, it's easier just to carve up the pie and I hate this image, but kick the can down the road. That can has been kicked down so many roads recently. Right. But I think that
can is about destroyed.
I know. I think what's possible is that you will have a rhetorical anti-government rhetoric. This goes back again to sort of the pre-92 period. You will have a rhetorical bias against the work of government by people who don't genuinely want to deal with the debt, and you will have people who do not want to make the investments in government that are key to growth work. And so one of the most important lines in modern political history, I think, came in this city in 1992 when Bill Clinton stood in Madison Square Garden and said to George H.W. Bush, "Mr. President, I feel like Abraham Lincoln and General McClellan. If you're not going to use your army, may I borrow it?" And what the Democratic Party did 20 years ago is they said, clearly the Republicans aren't genuinely interested in cutting things because they all have their favorites. What they were interested in, and they were not interested in making government effective. The party, the politician that can make that argument again will be successful.
And we'll see if it's Barack Obama before the end of his term.
Exactly.
John Meacham, his book Thomas Jefferson, The Art of Power, now out in paperback. Thank you so much. Really interesting.
Great. Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.